Welcome to this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane here with psychologist, author, and pro-life warrior, Dr. James Dobson. And Doctor, we have a lot to address today, so let's dive right in.
Well, Luann, as you know, we're going to talk today by phone to one of the heroes of the pro-life movement, Jill Stanek. I have known her for many years, and I admire her for her courage and dedication to the sanctity of human life. Many years ago, I want to remind the listeners who don't know, many years ago, she was a registered nurse in the labor and delivery department at Christ Hospital in Oak Lawn, Illinois, and she discovered that abortions were not only being performed there, but that some babies who were the victims of a botched abortion were left to die alone and without medical care. To me, I don't want to overstate it, but that's almost Nazi-esque.
Yes,
it's hard to believe that a civilized culture would do something like that to a tiny baby. Mm. Well, Jill was told that one of those babies was in a room that was used to hold soiled laundry. And she went into that room and found that baby and held him in his dying moments. And later, and what really took the courage, she went public with this information and exposed the barbaric practices occurring at Christ Hospital. And she eventually, some years later, but she eventually lost her job, and I think that was in 2001, for defending the helpless, frightened little human beings, little babies. Now, Jill has been a powerful voice for the pro-life cause ever since. And she testified twice before a subcommittee of the U.S. Congress when it was debating the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. I need to make a little side journey here to say something parenthetical. People have forgotten, or perhaps they don't care, that when Barack Obama was an Illinois state senator, he opposed a bill. He actually got up in front of the state Senate and opposed a bill that would have protected babies who were born alive after botched abortions. Mm. And, you know, he advocated that that procedure continue to be legal, where a baby would be born unexpectedly and then not given medical care or attention. And that man, of course, and I have to say this, upset some people, but so what? That man has now been elected twice to the office of President of the United States. And to my dismay, his position on the lives of dying babies was hardly an issue during his two campaigns. Mm-hmm. Somehow the American people just didn't either grasp or care mm-hmm. about what was going on. But Jill Stanek's work has continued, and now she's alarmed about something new, something that has happened just a few weeks ago. And it has to do with a decision that was made, a ruling that was handed down by Edward Corman. I hope our listeners will remember his name, Edward Corman. He's a federal district court judge, and he ruled that emergency contraception, known as in some circles as the morning after pill, had to be made available legally to all ages of people nationwide. Mm. He had no restriction on that, so that girls as young as 10 or 11 who think they're pregnant can walk into a pharmacy and buy medication that is designed to end their pregnancies, which, if they are pregnant, will, of course, kill the babies. Mm. And without parental knowledge. No one has to approve this. Those girls do not have to see a nurse. They don't have to tell anybody what they're doing. Their moms and dads probably have no knowledge of this whatsoever, or whether the girls are taking the medication properly or what its implications are. It's an outrageous ruling, and that's what we're going to talk to Jill about today. Mm-hmm. And I'm told she's on the line.
Yes, sir, she is. We have her standing by.
Jill, thank you for caring about human life and for standing up for what you and we believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Dr. Dobson, and thank you for having me on the show. And it's good to speak with you and Luann today.
I honor you. As a woman of conviction and courage, I called you a hero. You're probably uncomfortable with that. But anybody who would take the heat that you have on behalf of, precious babies, it's just hard for me to believe that that even takes place. Tell us what you remember about that. We're going to get into the emergency contraception issue very quickly, but take us back to those years when you were touched in your heart by what was taking place at Christ Hospital.
Well, I went to work at Christ Hospital because I thought by its very name I would be safe from such moral and ethical dilemmas like abortion. But I found out when I went to work in the labor and delivery department that Christ Hospital was involved in a late-term abortion procedure that sometimes resulted in babies being aborted alive. And if they were aborted alive, they were shelved to die in the soiled utility room. Mm. And this came home to me one night when a nursing coworker was taking a little abortion survivor to the soiled utility room to die because his parents didn't want to hold him and she didn't have time that night. And when she told me what she was doing, I couldn't bear the thought of this suffering child dying alone, and so I cradled and rocked him for the 45 minutes that he lived. He was between 21 and 22 weeks old, and he'd been aborted because he had Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And if he'd, anybody had attempted to resuscitate him, he couldn't have survived because his lungs just weren't mature enough. Nevertheless, that was a life-changing event, you know, as you could imagine, and propelled me to first try privately to appeal to the hospital to stop. And when it wouldn't, then we went public. And as an outcome of that, I was eventually fired. And as you mentioned, I testified for related legislation on the federal level called the Born Alive Act, which sought to protect abortion survivors because legislators saw the day here that abortion was going to leave the uterus and we would be talking about the merits of infanticide. And then meanwhile, in the state of Illinois, legislation was introduced because it was found that these babies weren't protected by law here, and that is when I encountered then no-name State Senator Barack Obama, testified before his committee three different times, and he voted against Born Alive four times, and he was the only state senator to speak against it on the state Senate floor. He definitely took a lead in overturning that bill, and he said in testimony that giving these abortion survivors, you know, we're talking about born babies but premature, he said the same rights as full-term babies, he said, would lead to the overturn of Roe v. Wade. And so he is so convicted on abortion that he's willing to allow infanticide for it to go forward.
Did you confront him directly? Did you talk to him at that time?
Yes, I did, in committee. The second year that I testified, Christ Hospital had created a comfort room. So no longer were babies being taken to the soiled utility room to die. They were now being taken to the comfort room, which was a nicely decorated room complete with a first photo machine in case parents wanted pictures of their aborted babies and keepsakes. And Obama argued with me in committee that why wasn't I happy with the creation of the comfort room, that this, in fact, betrayed my real motive, which was to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Again, I can hardly believe what took place there. Keith Oberman, one of the most liberal commentators who's ever been on television, I think, was on MSNBC And he referred to you one day as the worst person in the world. You remember that was June 4th, 2009. Is that characteristic of the kind of thing that was happening to you as a result of your action?
Sure, but I mean, I considered that an honor, and I even included it in my bio now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Dr. Dobson, as far as I was concerned, it's always been a war of words. You know, I've never so much as broken a fingernail, and, you know, we know about the martyrs throughout history and even today that are dying for the cause of Christ. And so what I've encountered is, you know, absolutely nothing compared to what others have encountered.
Well, I feel the same way. It may be of some encouragement to you to know that I received the Keith Olbermann Worst Person in the World Award, too, one day. And I considered it a badge of honor, I think, maybe.
Right.
You have been named by a Newsreel blog as being in the top 10 enemies of abortion that the left fears. So in the midst of all the terrible things that have been done to you and said about you, there have been many honors, too. Before we go again to our topic, you were invited to the signing of the partial birth abortion ban, which protects partially delivered babies from being killed by abortion. And that was November the 5th, 2003. And you might be interested to know that I was at the White House that day, too, and I didn't see you, but we were both there that day, and that was an exciting day.
It was a crowded room, several hundred people there.
Yeah.
Good times, now gone.
Now gone, because it appears that so many people just do not care. I've called this time the outrage of the day because of all the absolutely breathtaking things that are taking place now. And one of them relates, of course, to the ruling that was handed down by Judge Edward Corman. And I want your take on his ruling and what it means for families, what it means for adolescents, especially girls, and what we can take away from this.
Well, as backdrop, I, as a registered nurse, testified in 2003 before an FDA committee on behalf of Concerned Women for America when at that time they were wanting to make emergency contraception available over the counter for adults over 18. So I have a little history here and have followed it closely. And I know quite a bit about the morning after pill. People may not realize that emergency contraception and hormonal contraceptives are simply synthetic hormones. They're synthetic steroids. And we get alarmed when we hear about male hormones being taken, but no one is alarmed by hormonal contraception being taken by women, you know, on a daily basis, drip, 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 slow intake of these. But the emergency contraception is concentrated hormonal contraception to the point of it is 4 to 12 times the dosage of one birth control pill. Mm. And so it has risks that we don't even know about yet because there have been no long-term studies done on girls and women. But we do know that this increases the risk of breast cancer. We don't know to what extent. It increases the risk, and I'm talking emergency contraception now, of ectopic pregnancy by 3 times, and yet the common side effects of emergency contraception are cramping and severe pain that may mask the symptoms of ectopic pregnancies. Other harms of emergency contraception is that it is no barrier to STDs. And so STD rates have skyrocketed in countries where emergency contraception have been deregulated. Meanwhile, in these countries, abortions have not decreased. In fact, there's evidence that abortions have increased in countries where these have been made widely available. And also, this increased access, getting to the point of Judge Corman's ruling of making these emergency contraceptives available over the counter to anyone at any age. And So we're talking about, theoretically, a 10-year-old girl could go into a store and buy emergency contraceptives, and men and boys can buy these as well. This just increases, obviously, the risk of sex abuse of minors. And this was my topic during my FDA testimony in 2003, that all evidence points to the fact that the younger a girl is when she engages in sexual activity, the greater the risk that she is being sexually abused by an adult. And so the morning after pill is a free availability. Access is just going to make it that much easier for a sexual perpetrator to mask his abuse of a girl. And indeed, if she doesn't get pregnant, he can continue to abuse her. But then on the other hand, the New York Times just published some amazing statistics that the failure rate of Plan B, which is another name for the emergency contraception, is as high as 52%. So the failure rate of emergency contraception is at least half. Half the time that you take emergency contraceptives and you might be headed toward getting pregnant, it's that time of the month, you will go ahead and get pregnant anyway.
Jill, as I understand it, that information actually came from the research done by Planned Parenthood.
Yes, or the pill manufacturer itself, yes.
Yeah. What does a girl 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 know about medications and about how to take them and what the implications are and what she should report if symptoms develop? I mean, she has no knowledge of that typically at all, does she?
No, of course not. And, you know, we're not talking about girls that, you know, are teenagers. We're talking about girls who are younger than that. And I might add, in regard to pregnancy, Joycelyn Elders, who was a former Surgeon General under President Clinton, said, and I'm quoting, "Pregnancy in a young adolescent is an established sign of potential sexual abuse." And so young girls who are found to be pregnant are helped out of that situation if they go to a doctor and then the doctor can do some, and or their parents, and find out that she's being sexually abused by a teacher or an uncle or a stepfather. And so emergency contraception can remove a way to help a girl out of an abusive situation. And the facts are, as far as Planned Parenthood has also written on stats that it has now taken offline, but which I had screenshotted back in the early 2000s, that teenagers who have been raped experience higher pregnancy rates, and that teenage girls are more likely to become pregnant when they have adult partners rather than partners closer to their age. I was just quoting Planned Parenthood there. And so a young girl who is pregnant, by all signs, has likely been impregnated by a sexual abuser, and the morning after pill will go a long way to covering that up.
Yeah. You know, one of the tasks that parents have is to protect their kids from anything that can harm them. And how can they do that if they don't know, if they haven't been given the information? And this just illustrates for me how outrageous it is that just a week or two ago, a woman was on television she was everywhere talking about the fact that children don't belong to parents. Now, let's get that out of their heads, because the children belong to the community. And what they're doing is driving a wedge between parents and their children, who are trying their best, in most cases, to protect them and to shield them. This just illustrates how we absolutely have to fight that notion that somehow parenting is limited and we have to go to the community, to a judge like Corman, to make our decisions for us.
Right. And, you know, this is just one more step down the path that the people that are promoting sex are taking. And this isn't the first time. You know, for instance, they've tried to remove the barrier of abortion in young girls, of parents not knowing that their daughters are getting abortions, even to the point where school counselors are whisking girls away for abortions during the school day, and then the parents are never the wiser either. So this is just one more impediment toward parents being able to track and communicate with their children on this very important, and it can be deadly, issue, this behavior.
Is there anything that you see that we can do about it?
Well, Dr. Dobson, I think we can inform parents just like what we're trying to do now and educate them on the harms to their children outside their homes.
Yeah, and this is not the only thing parents have to be aware of in terms of sex education and what's being said in the schools. And, the children are targeted today with such misinformation from people who ought to know better. I still am shocked by the states that allow kindergartners to be introduced to homosexuality. And, they have no business knowing about perverse adult activity like that. And yet parents just remain blasé. And I would never let my child attend a school where that is being taught to them in kindergarten, first grade, second grade. Who knows what's being said there? But parents are the only hope for stepping in and protecting their kids. And I do pray that they will do it. Speaking of prayer, we need to be praying about this too, in the larger sense of what is happening to our children today.
Doctor, I am so glad you pointed that out, because for many of us parents listening, for years and years, we do just operate from a position of trust when we send our children off to school. And we're not trying to alarm. Well, actually, we probably are trying to alarm parents. But what it tells me as a mom is that parenting isn't for cowards, to quote one of your books. Yeah. And it is time for me to stand up and know what's going on and be ready to stand in and defend my child. I cannot sit back on the sidelines.
Do the words homeschools come to mind? Or certainly Christian schools, or schools where you are certain that the kids are not going to be subjected to this kind of treatment.
And, Doctor, even there are just so many options for parents anymore. You know, there are homeschooling co-ops, there are charter schools, there are online schools. So for that parent listening who's thinking, I have no choice, you really do, even if you can't commit to 100% homeschooling.
I imagine there are some of our listeners out there that'll say, oh, no, not homeschools again, because they say they're not going to be properly socialized. Well, first of all, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. That is dead wrong. But compare it, if it is true, with teaching children things that will warp their views of sexuality and who God is and who they are and all the rest of that. Well, we're out of time. Jill, any last thing that you want to tell us?
Yeah, I just want to mention that, you know, all of this seems to be focused on sexual behavior. There's an abnormal, as you know, interest in this. We try to guard our kids against smoking and drugs and drinking, but when it comes to this, they don't want us to be a part of anything that our kids are doing, getting involved in.
Yeah. Our culture does seem to be descending into a darkness, doesn't it? I mean, it does to me anyway. And that calls for prayer. And, Lou Anne, we're right around the corner from the National Day of Prayer.
Yes,
this is something that we ought to be praying about on that day and throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Jill, thank you again for what you stand for your courage and your ability to articulate the issues. We are standing with you, and as things develop that we ought to know, please give us a call and we'll pass it along.
Thank you for spotlighting this very important issue, Doctor.
Blessings to you.
And our thanks again to Mrs. Jill Stanek for joining us from her home in Illinois. As you can tell, Jill has indeed been fighting this battle for life alongside Dr. Dobson for many years now. In fact, I would encourage you to visit Jill's blog, which, by the way, is the top-ranking pro-life blog here in the United States, and we have linked to that at drjamesdobson.org. And, of course, as Dr. Dobson mentioned, we do need to be on our knees in prayer for this battle, so we have included a link to the National Day of Prayer website as well. All of this and more drjamesdobson.org, or give us a call, 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. With, of course, this quick reminder that we are a nonprofit ministry completely dependent upon your donations to continue this fight. So we thank you in advance for standing with us in this way. As we sign off, this quick program note for all of you in the greater Dallas area, I'm pleased to announce that Dr. James Dobson will be speaking at First Baptist Church in Dallas on Sunday, April 21st, as they dedicate their new facility. So we certainly encourage you to stop by and join him. That would be Dr. James Dobson at Dallas First Baptist Church on April 21st. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and we do invite you back next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.